on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
Alrighty, guys, my name is Aaron Robinson. It is time for a new episode of the Auto Bid. As you can tell, I'm rolling solo this week. My brother Andrew Robinson is out in Milan. It's fashion week out there, so he's got some stuff going on. Obviously, as you guys know, he plays professionally over in Portugal, and you know, so he took a little weekend trip there on their FIBA break over there in Europe. So he decided to take a weekend trip to Milan. I'm extremely jealous because I'm sitting over here in Baltimore, currently recording this episode, getting ready to head down to watch some Georgetown basketball. So excited about that. You know, I'll get to watch some basketball tonight, you know, get some good food. Georgetown, I will say, does have some great media food down there at the Capital One Arena. So looking forward to that. Also looking forward to this great episode we got today. We have an interview that you will not want to miss. Robert Jones, the head coach at Norfolk State, is going to sit down with us on today's episode. He's going to talk about, you know, his team's historic start to the season. They are currently 18-6, off to the best start in program history, I want to say. 9-2 in MEAC play, but they were 9-4 in non-conference play, which I believe was a record for Norfolk State. But going to talk about the season that his team is having this year over at Norfolk State. Also going to talk about some more important issues, you know, like why HBCU, specifically MEAC and SWAC head coaches, have such a hard time getting bigger jobs and getting other job opportunities, you know, when these head coaching opportunities come open in the spring. So we could talk about that, the HBCU Classic, and what type of exposure that brought for HBCU. So super excited to get you guys to that interview a little bit later on the show. Also going to dive into our mid-major top 25 rankings for this week. We had some huge risers and a lot of movement this week, so going to get you into that. But before we do all that, as always, have to remind you guys to make sure you guys are subscribing to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to the Auto Bid. Make sure you give us a subscribe, you know, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, give us a rating, 5 stars only, please. It does go a long way. We try to, you know, get this podcast out to the right audience and make sure that we are, you know, expanding and really getting a lot of ears on this information, because me and Drew do, you know, put a lot of work each week into getting this content out to you guys and trying to, you know, cover mid-major basketball to the best of our ability. So definitely all your support is appreciated, and any like, retweet on social media is appreciated, man. So, you know, thank you guys for all the support that you've given us up to this point, man. And let's keep rolling this thing, man, and keep growing this platform and this podcast as we give you the best mid-major content from a weekly basis, week in and week out. So also, I want to remind you guys to make sure you guys are tapping into my guy Pull Up Tay's music. That was him on the intro, going to be him on the outro. Again, one of the hottest artists out of Montgomery County. Make sure you guys are streaming his new project, Why Stop Now. It's out on all platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you know, consume your music, YouTube. Pull Up Tay is going to be on there, and make sure you guys are supporting his music, because he is one of the hottest up-and-coming artists that we have coming out of the DMV right now. But I mentioned, man, we had a lot of movement this week in our top 25 rankings, man. There were a bunch of teams that were risers, some teams that dropped after a tough week. So first, let me read you guys these rankings, and then we'll dive into, you know, the biggest risers and fallers of this week's action. So week 16, mid-major rankings. We only got a few of these left. I don't know if we're going to do one more or two more, depending on after the championship week stuff. Don't know if we're going to do one, you know, leading up to the March Madness tournament, or, you know, stop next week or what. So only got a few of these left. But coming in week 16, number one, Murray State. Number two, North Texas surges to the second spot in our rankings this week. Three, we got St. Mary's. Four, Boise State. Five, South Dakota State. Six, Wyoming. Seven, San Diego State. Eight, Davidson. Nine, Belmont. 10, Colorado State. 11, Loyola Chicago. 12, Iona. 13, New Mexico State. 14, Vermont. 15, Kent State. 16, Toledo. 17, Towson. 18, Ohio. 19, San Francisco. UAB comes in at number 20. Wagner out of the NEC at 21. Cleveland State repping the Horizon League at 22. Northern Iowa at 23. Chattanooga out of the SoCon at 24. And at 25, we have the Montana State out of the Big Sky. I'm not sure their mascot. I want to say it's like the Bears or something like that, but I don't want to get it wrong. But Montana State, huge love to them airing the poll for the first time this week at number 25. So gonna go ahead and dive right into these, man. I mean, there were a bunch of risers, but none bigger than North Texas, who surges up to number 2 in this week's rankings, man. They come in at 20-4 on the season, 13-1 in Conference USA. They've now won 12 straight games, man. This team is going to be a team that is going to be dangerous come March, man. I mean, people don't really understand. Obviously, this team is a team who won a game in the NCAA tournament. Last year, they were 13 seed, and they defeated Purdue in that 13-4 round of the NCAA tournament last year. And then they lost 4 starters, man. They come back this year, and they find themselves still in first place in Conference USA, man. This team is going to be a tough out in March, man, because they really defend. I mean, they're 19th nationally in defensive efficiency right now. They currently are they also are great at guarding three-point line and holding opponents to 28.6% from a three-point line, which is absolutely outstanding. Anytime that you can, you know, guard a three-point line and limit the amount of threes that you give up each game, that's going to be huge in terms of, you know, just making sure that when you run up against a team in the tournament that, you know, you're giving yourself a chance to compete in each and every game. And they also lead the conference in three-point percentage and offensive rebound percentage and free throw percentage, man. So they make threes, they attack the glass, and they are great at drawing fouls, man. So, you know, anytime that you have a team that can defend, but they can also make threes and offensive rebound and they get to the line, they're going to be extremely tough out. But the thing that makes them, you know, the hardest to prepare for is that they're 358th in the country in tempo. There's only 358 Division I teams, so they have the slowest tempo in America. They average about 59.3 possessions per 40 minutes. To give you a little bit of an idea of how slow that is, St. John's currently leads the country in tempo at 73.7 possessions per 40 minutes, and they're about, you know, what? Not 20. They're about, I'm bad at math here, 14 possessions fewer per 40 minutes, which is absolutely astounding. So obviously, you know, Grant McCaslin comes from that Baylor system with Scott Drew, and, you know, they're going to defend you, man. They're not there. Obviously, Baylor plays a little bit faster now with the guard play that they have, but North Texas, man, extremely stout defensively, can make the three. They're going to attack the glass, and they're going to get to the foul line, man. And they are going to be a tough out in March. So watch out for North Texas out of Conference USA, man. They're even entering at-large territory now with the body of work that they've put up over the course of the season. So even if they were to lose to a team like a UAB or a Louisiana Tech, you know, in the Conference USA final, they'll have a shot to still get in the NCAA tournament, man. And when they do, they're going to be a dangerous team, man. So if you're looking for teams to kind of watch as you fill out your brackets, they are certainly one of them this season, man. The second team, South Dakota State, they rose all the way into the top 5 of our rankings this week, man. South Dakota State, the team that has been extremely hot. They're one of the hottest teams in the country right now. I don't have their record in front of me, so let me go ahead and look that up for you guys really quickly. But they're a team, man, that's not getting enough attention nationally. I spoke about them this week on the Field 68 Mid-Major show with my guy Sean Paul. So if you haven't watched that show yet, make sure you go ahead and tune into that on the Field 68 YouTube channel. It also should be on their Twitter page as well. But South Dakota State comes in at 25-4, 16-0 in the Summer League, man. They've won 16 straight games, man. I mean, that's absolutely outstanding. Anytime you hit the 25 win mark before March, I mean, that's something that is extremely impressive, man. South Dakota State, man, going undefeated so far in league play at 16-0, man. They're playing some great basketball right now, and they're going to be a team that's going to be extremely tough to beat in March because they are elite, elite, elite offensive team, man. I mean, they lead the Summer League in offensive and defensive efficiency. They're 14th nationally in offensive efficiency, so they're not only one of the best offensive teams in their conference, but they're one of the best offensive teams in the entire country. They lead the entire country in effective field goal percentage at about 60%, and they lead the country in three-point percentage at 44.3% from three, which is unheard of, man. I mean, these guys are knocking down, you know, the three at 44% clip, man. That they're going to be extremely hard to beat, man. They average about 87 points a game in conference play, and they're outscoring their conference opponents by about 14 points per game, man. So they are leaving no doubt out there in the Summer League that they are the best team, and they also have two of the best players in the league in Baylor Scheiman and Douglas Wilson. Obviously, we know Max Asemus from Oral Roberts is also in that conference. So, you know, those two, along with Max Asemus, are certainly probably the three best players in that league. But Scheiman and Douglas Wilson are going to give the South Dakota State, you know, one of the best 1-2 punches in basketball when they hit March. So, South Dakota State, man, because of how great they are offensively, they're a team certainly to watch because of how good they shoot the ball, and also because, you know, they are capable of you know, defending you at a good enough rate where, you know, they'll be able to win some games. So watch out for South Dakota State in the NCAA tournament because they're another team that, if they get in, you know, obviously they're probably going to have to win their conference tournament. I don't think that they're an at-large candidate yet. So if they get into the tournament, man, they're going to be a team that could potentially shake some stuff up in your bracket, man. But one team, man, that and obviously I said that North Texas was arguably our biggest riser, man, but Kent State, they're all the way up to number 15 in our poll, man. This is the first time they've even been in our poll this season, man. They're all the way up to number 15 this week because they had an absolutely huge week. They beat Toledo and Ohio, who are the best two teams in the MAC right now, by a combined 36 points over the weekend, man. They beat Ohio by 23, and they beat Toledo by 13. And Kent State has now won 9 straight games. They're sitting at 18-9, 13-4 in MAC play, just a game behind Toledo and Ohio in the loss column in the MAC, man. But Kent State is one of the hottest teams in America right now, man. They're playing some great basketball. And should they, obviously, you know, end up in a tie, I mentioned they're one game back of Toledo and Ohio, they would have the tiebreaker for that top seed in the MAC because they swept Toledo and they split with Ohio on the season. So they're 3-1 against, you know, Toledo and Ohio. Toledo, by contrast, they swept Ohio, but they got swept by Toledo. But they got swept by Kent State. So they're sitting at 2-2 against those two teams in Ohio, who most thought was the best team in that league. They got swept by Toledo and they split with Kent State. So they're 1-3 against those three opponents. So if those three teams end up in a three-way tie atop the MAC, Kent State will get the one seed. If it ends up in a two-way tie between Ohio and Toledo, obviously Toledo will get the advantage because they swept Ohio head-to-head. But Toledo, man, Toledo, Ohio, and Kent State, man, are three teams that all could potentially win that league, man. That conference tournament is going to be extremely fun. I think if I had to pick a team, I think I would still put my money on Ohio just because of that experience, man. I mean, anytime they're coming off of an NCAA tournament last year, they got to win, man. Obviously, Jason Preston was at the helm last year at Ohio, and he's no longer there. But Mark Sears is one of the best players in that league, man, and he's going to be in the running for Conference Player of the Year at Ohio, man. And we've also seen them do it in the non-conference, man. I mean, they beat Belmont the first game of the season this year. Belmont is a team that is an NCAA tournament caliber team. Cleveland State, the best team in the Horizon League right now, lost to Ohio in the non-conference, man. And they also beat Mount St. Mary's, who we saw win the NEC. They were in the tournament last year. So this team is beating some good teams, man. We haven't seen Kent State and Toledo do. Neither of those two teams have the caliber of wins that Ohio has, in the non-conference. And also, they don't have the experience that Ohio has, having won the league last year and won a game in the dance last year. So if I had to pick one team in the MAC, I think I would roll with Ohio right now because of that experience and because we've seen them do it against quality teams in the non-conference, man. And last but not least, Montana State out of the Big Sky, man. They entered the poll at 25 this week for the first time this season, man. They're coming in at 21-6. 13-3 in the Big Sky, winners of 12 of the last 13 games. They had won 11 straight before they took a tough loss on the road at Eastern Washington, but then they bounced back with a win against a very good Southern Utah team. So Montana State is still in the driver's seat over there in the Big Sky. They also, man, we talked about South Dakota State earlier, a team that's a very good three-point shooting team. So is Montana State, man. They shoot the three at 38% clip as a team, man, which is 12th nationally. And they also guard the three very well. Opponents are shooting 32.2% from three against them, which is the best in the Big Sky right now. So they shoot the three very well, and they guard the three very well. So they're going to have an opportunity to be dangerous come March, man. And obviously, Weber State is also going to have a shot to, you know, make some noise in that league come conference tournament time. But, you know, Montana State certainly deserves their flowers right now for the way that they're playing right now. Again, 21-6 right now, winners of 12 of their last 13 games. They're playing their best basketball as we hit the stretch run as we head towards March, which is where the madness is going to happen, man. So, you know, those three teams were huge risers this week. Those four teams, North Texas, South Dakota State, Kent State, and Montana State all had great weeks and all are riding some huge momentum at this point in time in the season, man. So that was going to do it for the rankings talk. But one thing that I want to touch on before we get into the interview with Coach Rob Jones is the Mountain West, man. The Mountain West, obviously, all year has been an outstanding league. And there obviously been a conversation about, you know, the four-bid Mountain West. Is it going to happen? I think we're comfortably at three right now. I think right now Colorado State, Wyoming, and Boise State should all be feeling pretty good about where they are right now. I think all three of those teams are on the right side of the bubble. San Diego State is the one team that I think is teetering right now. And, you know, obviously they had a huge opportunity this past weekend to pick up a quad one win, because right now they only have two quad one wins. So, excuse me, they have three quad one wins, but they're 3-6 in quad one. And they had a huge opportunity to pick up one this weekend, but it lost to Boise State by one on Tuesday. Man, that was a big loss for them. Just because of the fact that, like I said, they only had three quad one losses. So anytime you had an opportunity to get a road win, you know, at this time of the season, man, that would have been huge for them. But again, San Diego State right now, the thing with San Diego State, you know, the net likes them right now. I mean, they're still second in the net in the Mountain West behind Colorado State, who is currently at 30. They're sitting at 31. And right behind them is Boise State coming in at 32 in the net. But their problem is they only have 5 wins in quadrant 1 and 2. They have 3 quad 1 wins, but they only have 2 wins in quadrant 2. Boise, by contrast, has 10. Colorado State has 10. And Wyoming has 8 in the first 2 quadrants, man. San Diego State's best wins right now are Colorado State, who they beat by 30 in January. They also beat St. Mary's in December on a neutral court. And they beat Utah State a few weeks ago, obviously, in league play. But those are their only 3 quad 1 wins right now. So, you know, they have opportunity on Monday. They're going to go to Wyoming, and this might be a must-win game for San Diego State, man, because, like I said, they don't have too many opportunities to pick up too many more quad one wins. They're going to get Fresno State at home, which should be a quad two win. So have an opportunity here to really get, you know, 2 wins in quad one and quad two, which would get them to 7 as we head toward the Mountain West Tournament. And then they'll probably have opportunity, hopefully, if they can advance to see either a Boise or a Colorado State or a Wyoming in the tournament and potentially get, you know, 2-8 in those first 2 quadrants. So if you can get, you know, 4 or 5 quad one wins, I think that will get it done for them. But they have some work to do, man. So I'm worried about San Diego State right now. If you lose this game to Wyoming, now you're really putting yourself in a position where you might have to win the Mountain West tournament, or potentially beat two out of your, you know, Wyoming, Boise, Colorado State mixes. If you see, you know, a Wyoming maybe in the semis and then a Colorado State in the championship. You're probably going to have to win the Mountain West if you want to get an at-large every San Diego State, just because I think that their body of work doesn't really stack up to the other teams that are sitting on the bubble right now. Like I said, only 3 quad wins, only 5 wins in the first 2 quadrants. So they have some work to do. But, again, man, they're a very talented team, elite defensively. And if anybody can pick up, you know, a much-needed win, I think they are certainly a team that could do so. So something to watch going forward. Obviously, there's a bunch of games that are going to happen this weekend. Gonna have some implications on the bubble. We'll get to those a little bit later. But right now, I think, you know, we've done enough waiting, man. I think it's time to get you guys into this interview with Rob Jones, man. We mentioned the season that Norfolk State is having, man. 18-6 overall record right now, and currently atop the MEAC at 9-2. So they are no stranger to success. They won the MEAC last season and punched a ticket to the NCAA tournament where they got a win over Appalachian State in that first 4, man. And Coach Robert Jones spoke to us about that win over Appalachian State and last year's run, and also the run that, you know, his team's on this season. So without further ado, here is Norfolk State's Rob Jones. Alrighty, guys, as promised, we are here with Norfolk State head coach Robert Jones. Obviously, Drew and I competed against Coach Jones when we were at Coppin for our lone season in 2019-2020. We had some good battles. Coach Jones' squad beat us twice, and we're supposed to play in the MEAC tournament that year, but COVID obviously wiped that out. But Coach Jones' squad is off to a great start this season, man, and obviously Coach Jones obviously also has a great story. I talked to you at the Coppin Norfolk game the other day, and you're from Jamaica, Queens. One of our best friends, Aaron McClure, is from Jamaica, Queens as well. And so, obviously, you know, you had a you also, from my standing group, single-parent household. Drew and I also grew up in a single-parent household and kind of really had to grind to get to where you are now. So, obviously, been at Norfolk State since 2007.
Been there for a long time and had a ton of success, but kind of walk me through, obviously, your journey. I mean, obviously, you're growing up in Jamaica, Queens, you coached in high school and coached AAU and, you know, did a bunch of things to, you know, make your way and get to the top where you are now. So just kind of talk me through your journey a little bit and what brought you to Norfolk State University today.
I mean, like you said, I grew up in, you know, South Jamaica, Queens. You know, as far as the coaching path, I didn't want to be a coach. You know, I think that I was kind of just suckered into being a coach, to be honest with you. I think that I was started off as a player. You know, I played at a Division III school in SUNY New Paltz, New York. And one of my assistant coaches from up there got a head job at Bard College. And he had asked me just to come over to help him out a little bit my last year at New Paltz. And, you know, I went from that just helping him out because I was in, you know, pretty good shape and able to play against the guys and stuff like that. To like, then he asked me to go recruiting with him. And then he asked me to sit on the bench with him. And then he asked me to, you know, do a scout with him and then come to practice. And now I'm a coach, you know. And then, you know, like after that is like, you know, I started, whatever I do, I try to do it the best of my ability. So I started to get into it more. And then I was able to go from there to, I went back to my alma mater for 2 years. And then I went to St. Mary's High School in New York, in Manhasset, New York for 3 years. I was the freshman head coach and the varsity head coach for 2 years. That when the other coach, Tim Kloos, was a coach there, left. And I know when you guys played at Quinnipiac, you guys played against Tim Kloos at Iona. So I had worked for Tim Kloos. That was my guy who gave me my first head coaching job. And then when he left to go to, I think he went to junior college first, and then he went to CW Post, then Iona. I took over the program there. And then after that, I came to Norfolk State as assistant coach in 2007. The coach there at the time was my assistant coach in college. He actually coached me. And we kind of kept in contact. And he said that if, you know, he ever got a Division I head job, he would look out for me, you know, and stuff like that as I moved up the coaching ranks myself. You know, him getting a job was, you know, unexpected. You know, no one knew. I mean, you know, there's only 358 of these jobs in the world. So it's like, you know, it's not guaranteed by any means, but he ended up getting it. And then I came down as an assistant coach. And, you know, I was there for the 6 years as assistant. And then he went on to FIU. And, you know, I got elevated to the head job. And the rest is the rest from here. You know, like I've been here for, you know, that. So even though, you know, I've been here for 15 years, I don't really feel like 15 years because it's like two different capacities. You know, it was like, you know, six as an assistant. And then it felt like, okay, you know, you do assistant, you get a new job as a head coach. So even though it's at the same place, so it doesn't really feel like 15 years, like, you know, like 15 years as an assistant coach or 15 years as a head coach, because it hasn't been, it's been, you know, half and half, really. Yep.
Now, I got to talk to you, you know, about you guys this year. I mean, you guys are having an absolutely outstanding year. You guys are sitting at 9-2 right now in the MEAC, 18-6 overall. And I mean, I want to talk to you guys because you guys had an absolutely historic non-conference schedule. I mean, you guys beat a plethora of Division I teams. You guys beat William & Mary out of the CAA, Hampton out of the Big South, UNC Wilmington, who's currently, I think, tied with Towson at the top of the CAA right now. You guys had some really big-time wins in the non-conference. Just talk about what your team was able to do in the non-conference. I mean, you guys are approaching 20 wins now for the year. But, I mean, just talk about, you know, just obviously now you guys are obviously in MEAC play, but talk about what you guys were able to do kind of in the non-conference and just on this run that you guys are on now, which is, you know, literally, I mean, one of the best runs that we've seen in the MEAC.
I mean, it's just been the guys just buy it in and lock it in. You know, I mean, I think the guys would also prove that, you know, last year wasn't a fluke or anything like that. You know, I think that a lot of people don't realize, and I don't think we get enough credit for as a program, not just, you know, myself or anything like that, get enough credit for as a program that we lost four starters from last year. People just see like, oh, 18-6, 9-2. Okay, that's what Norfolk State does or whatever. And that's not what we do. We're not usually 18-6. So that's not what we do. Now, 9-2, we know we've done that plenty a lot, but we're not just 18-6. And we lost four starters. So people, when they voted us preseason number one and stuff like that, it was just like really, I think, because we're the defending champs and not because of us necessarily fully earning or deserving of that preseason number one pick, because honestly, Morgan returned everybody just about. So they should have been preseason number one. But I think it was really more about the guys just trying to prove themselves that last year wasn't a fluke. And so we had a non-conference schedule that was a tough mid-major schedule. know, we had some guarantee games, but they were actually put, you know, towards the back end of that schedule. So we were able to kind of gain momentum already on that, you know, and it was like, you know, we played UNC Wilmington and like you said, they are on top of the CAA right now, and we beat them at their place. And that's another thing that we don't get enough credit for, because I don't look at like some of the bracketology projections just in case we do get in, you know. I think every coach looks at it. They're lying if they don't look at it. You know, they might not look at it all year, but around this time, if you're in first place and you think that you got a chance at making it, you start looking, you know, at the stuff. And to see like UNC, they got, you know, UNC Wilmington like projected over us as like a 15 seed and stuff. It's like, we beat them, you know, like, and our record is better than them. So, you know, what's going on with that? But that's a whole another podcast, I guess, with that situation. But the guys have been just locked in and, you know, We had a couple stumbles in conference, you know, two, I guess. But I think that we're very much locked in for this final week of the season, because we know it's at hand. I mean, we're on the verge of winning a regular season championship. Those are tough to get. And then, you know, we'll worry about the scope when the scope comes.
Now, you mentioned you lost four starters, but you did return two of your guards in Joe Bryan, Jalen Hawkins. Both of those guys are having outstanding seasons this year. And both of those guys are you know, potentially all MEAC caliber guys. Joe Bryan might be the MEAC player of the year this year, but talk a little bit about the seasons that those guys are having and, you know, the importance that those guys had, you know, kind of being two of the guys that came back that played big minutes for you last year and kind of stepping that into this season, being able to lead your bunch this year.
You know, I say it all the time, but I'm not afraid to say it. Joe Bryan is the MEAC player of the year. Like, if he's not the MEAC player of the year, it's going to be a travesty if he's not the MEAC player of the year. He's the best player on the best team. You know, like, I mean, what more do you want? What else constitutes player of the year, but the best player on the best, you know, team, you know? And he's the leading scorer in conference. I mean, if you want, because I know some people just look at numbers and stuff like that, but so, okay, so he checked, you know, three boxes, you know, he's not the MEAC player of the year. It's a travesty. But, you know, Jalen Hogan's, you know, he should definitely be a MEAC, all MEAC guard now, you know. Everybody's taste is different, so, you know, who knows what team he'll fall on, but he should definitely be there too, you know, honestly. You know, I mean, like I said, everybody's taste is different, so maybe whether it's first team, second team, or whatever, you know, I think he should definitely be there. So it helps to have a solid backcourt, man, because you know how it is, man. The backcourt runs college basketball. If you got a good backcourt, the frontcourt's icing on the cake. Like, if you got a good backcourt and a good frontcourt, then you're a really good team, you know. But you know, you got to have a good backcourt, because the backcourt controls the game. And you know, a lot of people have good backcourts, but I think that we have one of the best in the MEAC.
Yep. Now, I got to ask Coach, obviously, you know, from you know, me and my brother's lone year in the MEAC, and just watching the MEAC over the last couple of years, you know, Central had kind of had a stronghold on the MEAC for a while in the conference tournament, you know, winning, I think they won four straight. And for you guys last year, you know, being able to finally kind of get that monkey off the back and you guys won it, was able to advance to the NCAA tournament and not only win the MEAC, but you guys were able to get a win in the NCAA tournament, obviously in that game over Appalachian State. What was that moment like for you? Obviously, that was your first, you know, NCAA tournament win as a head coach. Just what was that moment like for you guys, you know, after last season, being able to accomplish that? You know, first of all, being able to kind of dethrone Central after the run that they had over the last 4 years. And then for you guys being able to kind of get that win in the NCAA tournament.
Well, yeah, Central had won actually three back-to-back, you know, tournament championships.
Okay, three.
Yep. Yeah, they had won, like, I guess the regular season when during the COVID season, I think it was, you know. Okay, so yeah. that's what happened with that. But well, either way, you know, it's like they always say you want to beat a champ, you got to beat the champ, right? So, you know, we played the champ the first game, you know, and our guys was locked in, and, you know, we got off to a 17-0 lead, you know. Like, I can't say I knew the game was over then, because it wasn't. You know, there's a lot of basketball to be played, but the way we were playing, I just knew it was going to be hard for Central to come back, you know. And they made a little run, you know, towards the end of the first half, but then we ended up pushing it back up, and we won by, you know, 29 points or 30, or was it maybe 31? One of those numbers, I forget exactly what it was. 30 points. Let's just go that. You know, about 30 points we won by. So then, you know, we got the day off because, you know, A&T had COVID or whatever, you know, whatever the situation happened. And that probably paid dividends more than anything, because now, you know, it's not really about resting the MEAC tournament. It's about preparation. Like, a lot of times you don't get a chance to prepare in the MEAC tournament, because it's like the games are bang, 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 you know. So to have a day off, you know, we didn't rest. You know, it wasn't like it was day off, but we had a day to prepare for Morgan. And I think we had way more time to prepare for Morgan than Morgan had to prepare for us. You know, even though that was like our fifth time playing them, though. So I guess it ain't a lot, whole bunch to prepare for. But because it ain't like the coaches are doing a whole bunch different, you know, the fifth time, you know. So because you run out of things to do, I guess, really. But, you know, it was, we just had more preparation time, man. We went in there and we, you know, we got to, you know, we did our thing early and we got to a double digit lead in the second half and just kind of held on and put the thing away, you know. So it was a great moment. And then, of course, going to the NCAA tournament, it was a little different than 2012 when I went as an assistant coach because, like, 2012, we were the 15th seed when we played Missouri, and we had a couple days off. We had a couple days to celebrate. We had a couple, like, a day to, like, Selection Sunday. We had a couple days of media, you know, before we flew out. But because of the situation last year with COVID and trying to get everybody in that bubble, you know, people don't realize is that we played, like, at 1 o'clock, you know, or whatever, you know, and we by the time we won, and then we cut down the nets and did some media stuff or whatever. We didn't do any, like, celebration in the locker room, no water or anything like that. It was like, somebody actually opened a bottle of water and I told them to put it down because we got to go. You know, like, we had to leave, and like our flight was like 6:30 that night. So like we had to go, you know, get out of there, pack, you know, run around. You still got the adrenaline and running because you just won a championship, but it's really like, you know, go get your stuff and we getting out of here, you know? So it might not have been 6:30. Be honest, now I was talking about it. It might've been like six. Like it was really close to from the time we won to the time you have to leave. You know, you don't got a chance to even tell your loved ones bye, you know, like, you know, nothing. Like, you try to make arrangements, you know, for your kids and stuff like that and everything like that. And you know, you just leaving, you know, you got to leave. So that was crazy. So hopefully if we're fortunate enough to win this year, it'll be a better overall experience. But of course, you can't take away the experience from winning that game. Winning that game, you know, because like you could go back again this year and not win. You know, winning a game in the NCAA tournament, it's a tremendous feeling because I mean, you get a chance to take your name out of one side of the bracket and put it in another slot and stuff like that. Like, it's you know, I mean, it's the best feeling in the world, man. Well, I don't care if it's first four, last four, second four, whatever you want to say. You know, it's an NCAA tournament game and it counts as NCAA tournament win. And as we know, there's a lot of great players, a lot of great coaches who have never won an NCAA tournament. I mean, there's a lot of people that never even got there, but there's a lot of people that never won an NCAA tournament game. So, you know, we're blessed in that regard.
Now you referenced the 2012 team, and that was a team that was led by Kylo Quinn, who was the first player to be drafted out of HBCU since 1988. Got drafted number 49 in the 2012 NBA draft, and obviously you had the opportunity to coach him, man. So he actually was at the Cotton game this weekend, and I had the opportunity to see him there. But, you know, talk about, you know, the impact that he made on the program and what it was like coaching him back in, you know, what do you kind of remember from those days, obviously, when he was there back in 2012?
I mean, Kyle Quinn was my first recruit here at Norfolk State, like my very first recruit that I got signed. So I guess I hit the jackpot early, you know, with him. So, I mean.
Kept you around, huh?
Huh?
I said, That one must have kept you around, huh?
Yeah. That kept me around, I guess, you know. So I hit the jackpot early with him. And then, you know, the thing with Kyle was that he was, we was his first offer, you know. I mean, an only offer, I should say. You know, it wasn't like he was like this NBA player from the time he was 10 years old or anything like that. Like, that wasn't what it was. You know, he averaged 5 points a game his freshman year, you know. And he just kept getting better and better and better. And honestly, the game that we knew he was going to be a pro, like you could kind of see it a little bit, but a game that put a stamp was actually against Coppin up there. Like, he had 37, 19, and 6. And we was like, oh, it's over now. You know, like and this was like his junior year. The end of the junior year, it was like a double overtime game. He had 37, 19, and 6. So once that happened, man, we knew. So, like, that summer he went and worked out in Vegas with pros and things like that. He came back with a whole different swagger. And then his senior year, you know, he was able to do some amazing things. And then, of course, NCAA tournament, he had 26-14 against, you know, guys who was going supposed to go pro or whatever the case was. You know, and he destroyed them. He was the best player on the floor. But the thing that people don't understand is that, you know, like, people think that NCAA tournament, like, put him in the NBA, you know. And the thing I tell people all the time is that just cemented him. You know, like, he had his invite to the PIT, the Portsmouth Invitational, you know, top 64 seeds in the country. He had that back in January. Like, people had already saw that already, you know, like, so people think that he got all this stuff because of the NCAA tournament. No, I just kind of put him on the radar a little bit more. We had scouts coming to our game all year because of what they heard about in Vegas and then that Coppin State game. And that Coppin State game was on ESPN, like, stat line, one of the stat lines of the year because of what he had, 37, 19, and 6. That was, like, you know, almost insane. That's like almost a 40-20, you know, game, you know? So that just put him on the map. And then, you know, it's great. I mean, for him and us, it's been a great partnership because obviously the success that he had in the NBA, and I know now he's, you know, playing overseas, probably, you know, finishing up his career, you know, or whatever, overseas. But having him in the NBA for so long, because he was there for 8 years, you know, that we were always able to, you know, say that you could, and we still to this day able to say, you know, a kid walked our, you know, our hallway and was able to make the NBA, you know, and not like a kid from 1955 or something like that, you know, like a kid that was recent that was able to walk the hallways of Norfolk State and make the NBA. And honestly, I think a lot of people in the league, you know, use that, you know, because they can say like, yo, you know, you come from the same league that a kid just got drafted from, so why not come to the MEAC or come to wherever, you know? So I think it benefited everybody, you know, and happy that, you know, his career turned out the way it did.
I think it's a great segue to my last question because, you know, you mentioned talking about, you know, kind of kids being able to make it to the NBA from the MEAC, and we just finished watching the NBA All-Star Weekend, you know, who showcased that, you know, the game between Howard and Morgan State, you know, during All-Star Weekend. And I kind of want to ask you, Coach, like, what do you think is kind of, what do you think, you know, that kind of that game or kind of that notoriety kind of meant for HBCUs in general? I mean, I think that obviously recently, in my opinion, I feel like I've seen, you know, a little bit of a shift in the narrative around HBCUs. Obviously, you know, Howard was able to sign a five-star recruit. There's been, you know, kids like Mikey Williams, he's going to consider HBCU and things like that. And now, you know, we're on the big stage at All-Star Weekend, you know, for, you know, and the game was on NBA TV, TNT, and ESPN. I mean, three national media networks. Obviously, you know, you guys are the defending champs. There's probably going to be a good chance you guys are going to be featured in the game probably next year or in the near future. So, I mean, what do you think just about HBCU basketball and kind of the direction that it's going? You mentioned obviously having Kyle O'Quinn playing in the league for 8 years. Just what do you think about the direction of HBCU basketball and kind of the state, you know, that is at right now?
First of all, I think we should have been in that game. That's first of all, I'll say that. Being the first place team, defending champs, you know, I mean, you know, shout out to Howard and Morgan who put on a good show for national TV. But I would say I think that we should have been in that game. But, you know, that's for another day. But I do think that it's been other media outlets that have, you know, have transformed or started to transform HBCU basketball coverage. I mean, from the Michael B. Jordan thing that happened, that I think Central and Howard and a couple other teams played in, that was at the Prudential Center, that was on TNT, you know, to the Chris Paul Classic when we played in, that was on ESPN and ESPN2. Like, I think that was, they said that was like the first, when we played Hampton that first night, that was the first HBCU game on ESPN, like ESPN1. And like, I think somebody said almost ever, you know, like, or at least like some like long time ago, like, you know, when it first started or whatever, because if you know how it is, all of our games are either on ESPNU, you yeah. know, you might get a little ESPN2 every now and then, you know, you know, when you're in a MEAC tournament, you play on ESPN3 into the championship game, you know, you never on ESPN1 ever, you know, so like the game that we played on against Howard, you know, we were on ESPN1. So, you know, I think that, and it's funny saying that because, you know, been at so many channels at ESPN before you had to say ESPN1. Everybody, you know, knew what ESPN, right? But like, it's like, it was great exposure. I think so. I think it's more events happening. I think that the media are embracing having these events because the media has to embrace it too. You know, ESPN had to agree to put this game on, you know, our game with the CP3 thing, you know, the thing that just happened over the weekend with the All-Star game, the Legacy Classic with TNT. You know, these media outlets have to agree on that stuff. So I'm glad to see that they're agreeing and they're seeing the value of having HBCU basketball on a big stage.
Now, Coach, I have to ask you this. You're the first MEAC coach that we've had on here. And after we had a conversation in the summer with Jeff Goodman about this, basically just about MEAC coaches and, you know, how hard it is for a lot of MEAC coaches to be able to move up and to be able to get jobs. And, you know, we see all these coaches, you know, from PWIs that are, you know, getting jobs, and even obviously Coach Ryan Ritter last year from Bethune was able to get you know UT Martin, and Bethune hasn't even been to the tournament in God knows how long. And obviously, you know, Coach Ritter is a great guy. We had him on here, so no shade to him at all. But you know, why do you think it's so hard, you know, for coaches, you know, at HBCU to get jobs and to get, you know, other opportunities? And what do you think has to change in order for coaches to be able to get more opportunities at some of these jobs that end up opening up every year?
I mean, I think that, you know, just like with anything else, we talk about the games or just the players, you know, got to be more exposure or more, you know, reality or understanding the reality that there's a lot of good coaches in this league too. I would like to throw myself in that mix, you know, and then because of the other good coaches in the league. But it's like some of the things that we've done at Norfolk State, if we did it at any other school in the country, like, you know, I'll be in the Big East. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's like, let's just call a spade a spade. You know, like, you know, I got the fourth best conference record in the country, you know, but yet it's always a struggle to find, you know, and it's not about, and the thing I'll say quickly is that it's not really about, I speak for myself. I think that I can speak for some other HBCU coaches too. It's not always about leaving the HBCU, you know, or something like that. It's about just kind of sometimes getting the recognition that you're doing a good enough job that you have the opportunity if you choose to do that. You know, like you almost want the opportunity to say no if you, you know, want to, you know, say no. Because I mean, honestly, I got a pretty good situation at Norfolk State. You know, it's like my baby at this point. I done seen it grow. I done been involved with every good thing that's happened in Norfolk State Division I basketball history. So I can't say that I'm like chomping at the bit to like just leave, you know, stuff like that. But I do think that I've done enough that it should be more suitors, you know, and I think that other people in the league have done enough that it should be more suitors that, you know, because when you're chasing people that have done like a tenth of what you've done, and that's no shade to any coach, you know, out there. I'm just calling a spade, you know, that there's some coaches that have done a tenth of what that I've done, or a tenth of what Lavelle has done, or a tenth of what, you know, Brodus has done and stuff like that, that are getting these call-ups, like they're the next Dean Smith or something like that, when, you know, we will coach circles around them. And that's just straight up, you know, what it is. And, you know, the thing that people say is that, a lot of black coaches were hired last year and stuff like that. And that's true. There was a lot of black coaches hired, but there was no MEAC black coaches hired. And I say MEAC black coaches hired, you know, like let's call it what it is now, you know? So like, I think a lot of times it's a triple standard. You know, I think that, you know, it's a double standard because you're a black coach, so you got to already do more than what you, so, you know, what you should have to do. But then almost a triple standard, like, you know, they almost want you to get to the Sweet 16, you know, for me at, you know, to get like the call from somewhere or something like that. And it's like, you know, first of all, we talked about people winning a game. You know, there's a lot of coaches that move up or get chances that never won a NCAA tournament game or never got to the NCAA tournament, all right? Then you talk about, all right, if you want to get to the Sweet 16 or something like that, you got to win two games, sometimes three, and you play the play-in. So we got to win two or three games before people start knocking on the door. That's like insane, you know, and stuff like that. And once again, you know, because I know some of my Spartan, you know, fans will see this or whatever, probably, you know, nobody's in like this super rush to leave Norfolk State. But I do think that just as a conference as a whole, people need to get more recognition and have the ability to even say no. Like, we should be in the room more. We should be in the room more because, you know, I look at, you know, and I don't want to call any names, but I'm looking at another coach that's having a pretty good year in Virginia. And, you know, he's looking at like a messiah. And like, we're like, yo, our record is the same exact record. You know, like, well, I don't know what people are talking about, you know. So, you know, and once again, like on these podcasts, you know, I'm going to keep it real, man. I'm going to be honest with you because, you know, it's just what it is, man, you know.
Always. Like, Coach, man, I know you got to run. So this is going to be my last question for you, man. But, you say you got to keep it real, so I'm going to keep it real too, man. You know, my last year at Coppin, you know what I'm saying? We you know what I'm saying? Y'all beat us twice in the regular season. You know, we had a little, you know, a little animosity there. You know,
we beat you bad.
Yeah, you know, but it's okay though, because we had won three straight going into that MEAC tournament. We was ready for y'all. We was ready. We was like, you know what? We were about to send them home. That's what our mentality was. You know what I'm saying? So I was wondering, like, you know, what would your response would be to that? You know what I'm saying? Because on my side, like, we was waiting to see y'all that year. You know? Like, hey, they gonna beat it three times. No way.
All right. I mean, my response to that, I'll say that, you know, sometimes you gotta be careful what you ask for. You know, like, you guys. Were pretty good players, you know, and besides that, I can see y'all demeanor. Y'all was pretty respectable, you know, and stuff like that. So I always look at that even past the player, you know, like, is the kid respectable? Is he, you know, not a jerk? Because, you know, there's some players that were some jerks. There's some jerks that was on your team. I'll be honest straight up with y'all. But, right. You know, y'all didn't fall in that category and things like that. But, you know, I, you know, we had some two pretty good wins against y'all. You know, two pretty good win margin against y'all. And let's just say that when the breakers came out, we were happy it was y'all. Let's just say that.
And then look, luckily the game never happened, so we can you know have a little debate for years.
Yeah, we can have a debate. Yeah,
we'll have a debate for years and years to come, man. But obviously, you know, one, thank you for coming on, man. I don't want to take too much of your time, and I just want to obviously, you know, best you guys best of luck going forward. Best of luck, you know, obviously with the success that you guys have had this season, man, and for you personally, just the things that you've done at Norfolk State, man, it's been great to watch. So best luck to you going forward. Hopefully we can stay in touch and wishing you the best going forward, except for if you guys play Cobham in the MEAC tournament.
Oh, man, y'all like that. Y'all like that down with Cobham. Y'all only went there for a year. It's all right, man. y'all only went there for a year, man. Knock it off. but, man, thank you. You know, once again, man, you know, thanks for having me. And like I told you at the game, man, you know, continued success in this media world. I know this media world has a lot of similarities with the coaching world. You know, some doors that you got to try to break down that, you know, are open for others that might not be open for you. But hopefully you guys keep breaking them down and, you know, go from there. And, you know, and hopefully I'll see y'all on, you know, ESPN or TNT or wherever, you know, in the near future, man. So keep doing your thing, though, man.
Yes, sir. Cheers to that.
All right, man. Appreciate y'all, brothers.
All righty, guys. That was head coach Robert Jones of Norfolk State, man. We had some great battles with Coach Jones, man, over the year. I won't lie. There's definitely some animosity there between Cobham and Norfolk, man. But always, me and Drew have always respected, you know, his work ethic, man, and the job that he's done, the program that he's built over at Norfolk State. Him and Lavelle Mullen, obviously, are two coaches that have extreme success in March, man. Of course, my guy Juan Dixon has done a great job building that Cobham program over in West Baltimore, man. And he mentioned Kevin Broders over at Morgan State, man. There's some great coaches in the MEAC, man. And anytime you have opportunity to highlight some great black coaches, man, we want to do that. And obviously, it's Black History Month, so, you know, definitely was a fun conversation talking to Coach Jones, man. And something that I think he mentioned that is key is that these MEAC coaches, man, do not get enough respect for the jobs that they do, man. I mean, it's almost like you said, man, there's a triple standard. A guy like Lavelle Mullen, who has been to multiple NCAA tournaments, man, has still not gotten a job, you know, at a higher level, man. And even him, you know, somebody who's you know, won at an extremely high clip in his time at Norfolk State, hasn't gotten a bigger job. But there are coaches at, you know, in other leagues that have gotten opportunities that haven't done what they've done. So that's something that has to change, something that I hope will change in the coming years. And, you know, us over here at All Facts Media, we're not going to stop talking about it until we start to see these things tangibly change. And so, again, thanks to Coach Jones for coming on and for highlighting that. And we look forward to speaking with him again in the future. But now it's time for our favorite segment of the week, the craziest thing we saw, man. I know this is a mid-major show, man, but I have to talk about the Big East, man. The Big East has been on a historic run this season, man. And obviously the last, you know, two or three days in the Big East has been one out of a movie, man. Obviously we saw the crazy ending to that Villanova-UConn game after Dan Hurley got tossed, which was completely bogus, I must say, to get tossed for – the first tech was warranted. And I know, you know, Hurley doesn't have the best, you know, reputation with referees. You know, so the first tech I do agree with. But for him to get tossed after that, man, that was an ego thing, and that was something that you can't allow to affect a great basketball game that we were watching. And kudos to my guy, head coach Tom Moore. I mean, excuse me, he's a former Quinnipiac head coach, Tom Moore. He's now on staff at UConn, but him and Coach Kamani Young did an outstanding job stepping in and really rallying the troops, man, and being able to earn a huge win for UConn over Villanova at home in a rocking Excel Center out in Hartford, man. So that was great to see. Then the next night, you see Xavier and Providence play a triple overtime game. One was that was bonkers, man. We saw a roof leak. At the dunk in Providence, man, they had a little delay. I guess there was a bunch of rain out there in Providence, man. The roof started leaking. They had to stop the game for a while and get that figured out, man. And then the game resumed, man. It was a triple overtime game. We saw buzzer beaters and an absolutely outstanding night. Providence now controls their own destiny in the Big East. Right now with a two-game lead over Villanova. Providence comes in at 13-2. Villanova at 14-4. Two games back in the loss column, and Providence has two games left. They're going to see Creighton, and then they're going to see Villanova. And if Providence should lose that game to Creighton, then Villanova is going to have opportunity to win
Villanova had an opportunity to win the Big East regular season championship if they can earn a sweep over Providence. But if Providence can take care of business versus Creighton, then they are going to be Big East champions for the first time in the history of the league. So, again, man, I always love to see, you know, African-American head coaches winning. Ed Cooley is one of the best in the country, man, and had to, you know, give him a shout-out on this week's episode of the Auto Bid. And the Big East, man, it's refreshing to see the Big East, you know, back to where it rightfully should be, man. My older brother, Billy Edelin, played in the Big East at Syracuse, won a national championship there with Carmelo Anthony. So I grew up watching this league, and I fell in love with this league, and it's awesome to see this league back where it's supposed to be, man. But it was crazy, man, seeing Hurley get tossed like that, then the very next day seeing a roof leak, triple overtime game. Wild nights here in the Big East, man. So definitely wanted to talk about that on this week's episode, man. But before we get you out of here, man, there's going to be a loaded slate of college basketball this week, man. So if you do not have multiple screens, I suggest you know, get to your nearest sports bar this weekend, or, you know, go invest in a laptop or an iPad, or, you know, some, obviously we got cell phones here, but there's going to be a lot of great basketball on this weekend, man. So going to give you a few games to look forward to this weekend, and then we're going to get you guys out of here for this week's episode, man. But started off with Wagner at Bryant Saturday at 4 p.m. And these are the best two teams in the league, man. Wagner and Bryant both are two teams that most people pegged before the season to be the best two teams in the league. Wagner got the best of Bryant on their home court. Wagner going to go to Smithfield looking to sweep Bryant. These are also the two best teams, two best players in the league, man, and Peter Kitson and Alex Morales. And I had to include my guy Charles Pride in that. These might be the best three players in the NEC, and Charles Pride and Peter Kitson of Bryant and Alex Morales of Wagner, man, because both of these guys are special. Peter Kitson currently leading the country in scoring right now. He's on an absolutely ridiculous tear for Bryant right now, and he's probably the front runner for player of the year in the NEC right now, but Alex Morales is going to have something to say about that, especially if they can win this game. But Peter Kiss, we mentioned, man, has scored at least 30 points. And let me count this out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 consecutive games, he scored at least 30, man. And that guy is on a roll right now. Him and Charles Pride are currently the nation's leading scoring duo. Peter Kiss is averaging 24.8 points per game, and Charles Pride is at 17.8 points per game with 8.4 rebounds and 2.7 assists. Charles Pride is a PSA Hoops Putnam Science Academy alum, so had to give him a shout-out. And my guy Peter Kiss, who I played with at Quinnipiac, had to give those guys some love. But they have a huge one up there in Smithfield this week as they host Wagner. Bryant right now is 14-2. Wagner 15-1, so just the game separates those two. If Bryant should get the win at home, those two would go into a tie for fourth place in the NEC, man. So that's going to be something to watch this weekend. Huge game. Saturday game is going to be on ESPN3 at 4 o'clock, so make sure you guys are tuning into that. Another 4 o'clock game is Louisiana Tech at North Texas, man. This is going to be a huge game in Conference USA. North Texas right now, like we talked about before, is in first place in that league. But Louisiana Tech might have the Conference Player of the Year in Kenneth Lofton. Obviously, North Texas right now is three games up on Louisiana Tech. North Texas is currently 13-1 in the league. Louisiana Tech is 10-4. So, you know, not really any seeding implications here, unless North Texas completely, you know, implodes down the stretch. But that's going to be a fun game to watch, man, to see Kane Lofton go up against that North Texas defense and see how they, you know, try to slow him down. So, two of the best teams in Conference USA in Louisiana Tech and North Texas. So, Saturday, 4 p.m., make sure you have multiple screens because you're going to want some eyes on that game. And I mentioned, make sure you don't want to have multiple screens because another 4 o'clock game on Saturday is UNC Wilmington at Delaware. Man, this is going to be a huge, huge, huge game in the CAA because UNC Wilmington currently is tied atop the CAA with Towson right now. So they can't afford to drop any game. But Delaware right now is also in the mix in the Colonial, man. So they're going to be looking to potentially creep up into the upper echelon right now. Towson and UNC Wilmington both sit tied at 13-3. Delaware is coming in at 10-5. So they're 2.5 games back. So not really a you know, game where Delaware can reach the one seed. But if UNC Wilmington drops this game, then they're potentially going to be on the two line. They have to play potentially Hofstra probably in that 2-3 matchup. Whereas Delaware currently sits in that four seed. They're looking at a semifinal matchup with Towson if things go chalk. But obviously we know the CAA, you know, tournament rarely goes chalk. So huge game nonetheless. Two of the best teams in that league. Delaware was picked first in that league preseason. UNC Wilmington currently is in first place in that league. So Saturday, 4 p.m., you got three games to watch. Wagner at Bryant, Louisiana Tech at North Texas, and UNC Wilmington at Delaware, all going Saturday at 4 p.m. And then a huge game in Missouri Valley, another game that's going to be for a conference championship, is Loyola Chicago. It's going to travel to Northern Iowa and face a hot Northern Iowa team, man. And this team is a team that, coming into the year, we thought was going to be a team that could contend to win in Missouri Valley, man. And, you know, they stumbled in non-conference, man, but they've really found themselves now. Right now, playing some great basketball, won the last three games, sitting at 13-4, tied with Louisville Chicago atop the Missouri Valley, man. So this game right here is going to essentially be, you know, for the Missouri Valley regular season championship, the last game of the regular season for both teams. So it's a winner-take-all game. You know, the winner gets the one seed, loser gets the two seed. Louisville Chicago beat Northern Iowa really handily on their home court a few weeks back, so Northern Iowa going to be looking for some revenge on their home court. Loyola, quite frankly, hasn't been playing great basketball, you know, in the month of February. They've dropped a few games that they, you know, that they don't normally lose. In conference play, Northern Iowa has the opportunity here to really, you know, make a statement here and potentially earn the one seed. That's going to be a game. It's Saturday, 6 p.m. It's going to be an ESPNU game, so definitely make sure you are tuning into that one. Huge game in the Mountain West on Saturday. Colorado State is going to go to Utah State. Utah State somehow still a top 50 team in KenPom, which is wild to me because they have 13 losses, but you know they lost a lot of close ones. Similar to how Providence has won a lot of close ones. We had a debate in our group chat about this the other day. Utah State nonetheless is a great basketball team. Colorado State with the opportunity to pick up another quad one win. Saturday it's going to be a 10:30 game. It's extremely tough to win at Utah State, so we'll see if Colorado State can earn a big road win there. Again, it's going to be late Saturday night, 10:30 p.m. And then in the MEAC, we mentioned two of the best coaches, man, and Rob Jones and Lavelle Mowen. Norfolk State, North Carolina Central, those two teams are going to square off Monday night, 7:30. Central's going to go to Norfolk State. Central beat Norfolk State on their home court earlier in the year, handing Norfolk one of their two losses in conference play. So we're going to see if Norfolk State can bounce back and earn a split here on their home court. Again, it's going to be Monday, 7:30 p.m. Another game Monday night is going to be, we mentioned it earlier, man, in the Mountain West. San Diego State is going to go to Wyoming Monday night, 9 p.m., man. A huge game for San Diego State because, again, we mentioned the predicament that they're in, you know, trying to earn quality wins to finish the year. So, a huge opportunity to earn a road win against a good Wyoming team. Big opportunity for them Monday night. So, then, of course, it's not March yet, but we got our first conference tournament kicking off on Monday night. It's going to be the NEC tournament. Times are still to be determined. I'm still kind of figuring out, you know, the matchups and where it's going to be because of, obviously, you know, the games that have to play out here this weekend. But that's going to be our first conference tournament tipping off on Monday. The first round matchup in the NEC tournament. And then Tuesday, we get the A-Sun and the Patriot League kicking off. So it's almost that time, folks. It's seasons are getting ready to start ending, man. And we're going to, you know, get our one shining moments here coming soon. Conference tournament season is right around the corner, man, and I cannot wait. So, again, man, a lot of basketball to be played, man. This was a very, very fun episode. Before we get off, I want to remind you guys again, make sure you guys are subscribing to our content, man. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like button. Give us a rating, 5 stars only, man. Hit that retweet, that like on social media, man. Share our content. Tell a friend and tell a friend about the Auto Bid, man. We try to give you guys the best mid-major content out here each and every week, so it truly does go a long way if you guys can support what we got going on here at All Facts Media, man. So, also, man, last but not least, make sure you guys are streaming my guy Pull Up Tay's music. It's going to be him on the outro. His music is, again, out on all platforms, Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Tap into my guy Pull Up Tay's music, one of the hottest artists out of Montgomery County, out of the whole DMV. This is going to be him on the outro. Enjoy your week. Enjoy the rest of February, man, as we turn the page to March. Be safe and enjoy the basketball this weekend, folks. Boy, you beating on me. It's time to get a check, boy. You want a sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You beating on me. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take your last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy. Let's go. What's the topic of discussion?